Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared create collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my conversation today is another TIFF interview with the filmmaker Mohanad Yacoubi, and we talk about his film Off Frame, aka Revolution Until Victory. It really is a unique approach to a very complicated problem in the Middle East, and it gives us a fresh and interesting look into, a historical look into the Palestinian people's struggle to reproduce, I guess you could say, their own image, their own identity in light of the history in the region. Mohanad and I talk about a great many things. We talk about the armed struggle. We talk about revolution and rebellion and about looking for shadows. How interesting is that? We get into some of the more fundamental, I suppose, issues in the region. And we certainly touch on a lot of things, and we both smiled at how we could have kept this conversation going for hours. We talk about the power of the people to work towards change. And how's this that he says, quote, "I'm not afraid of disappearing." And I'll let you take that into the interview coming right up. DavidPeckLive.com for more information about my speaking and my writing and my podcasting, and Rabble.ca, of course, as well for more, a whole host of other podcasts on political and social issues. Check it out there, Rabble.ca. Mohanad Yacoubi on his film, Off Frame, aka Revolution Until Victory. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by a very special guest today to talk about his new film called Off Frame. And he is mostly a producer, as I've just found out, but he's a director here to talk today about his film Off Frame. Mohanad Yacoubi is here today with us. Mohanad, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, David, for having me on.
So our listeners can probably already tell that you are on a Skype call. Where are you calling from today?
Yeah, I'm calling from Ramallah, which is a city. It's like 10 kilometers north of Jerusalem, and it's the center of the PA, the Palestinian Authority. So it's kind of it used to be a small town before Oslo, before signing the Oslo Agreement in 1994. But after Oslo, the PA centered itself here, so it grew up and it became kind of a hub for several like Palestinians coming from outside, from West Bank, from Gaza. It's a hybrid city. It's very high tech, thanks for the occupation, of course. I'm speaking from there. That's why we have good internet here. It's not the case in Arab world, though.
Right. We have an amazing connection. It's great. It's better than some of my mobile connections here in the city in Toronto.
Yeah. I mean, that's the occupation, the Israeli occupation are obliged to provide us with services, and including internet. So we're getting first world internet here. Speed.
It's an excellent connection. Let's hope we have it for the whole conversation. Thanks for your time, and listen, congratulations on the film Off Frame, aka Victory Until Revolution. Revolution Until Victory. Yes. So you just mentioned before we hit the record button that you're a producer. I made a comment about that, and not really a director, and yet you've been passionately committed, by the sounds of it, to this project for about 7 years. Tell me why did you decide to add director to your CV?
I don't see directing as a job. I see it as a hobby.
Okay.
I used to be a photographer when I started my, artistic career after university. And I did a lot of photographs. There is one task that I had to photograph 417 villages for this encyclopedic book about architecture.
Wow.
About architecture, historical architecture in Palestine. So me and my partner in the company, Idioms Film, Sami Said, who's also the other producer on Off Frame, we did 3 months of photographing, and every day we were doing between 200 and 300 photographs. And after that, I got totally, after this finishing that task, I couldn't touch the camera to do photographs for a long time. So I hated photography, and I decided to stop. Until I come in that passion. And that was my fear with directing as well. I don't want to be exploiting myself in directing a lot. But I love to be in films. I mean, my passion is to be on sets and to be networking, to be doing everything around, helping and doing things around the film industry itself. But I wanted to keep directing as a... not as a hobby, but is to keep as honest as I can and to enjoy it the most. And that's actually, with this film, Off Frame, took me the seven years almost to finish it, even a little bit longer with the research. But I think I didn't finish. I mean, I'm still. This is kind of the last version of the film, but I'm still thinking, I can do that. I can change this. Maybe next year I will do another part. It's a way of life, I think.
Right.
More than a career for me.
Isn't there a sense in which every film is kind of unfinished, or do you feel like, in a way, I can't tell you how I think how relevant your film is today, and I've seen it referred to as a film essay, and I'm not sure that's totally a fair comment. I think there's a narrative here. I think there's a story here. Yes, it has that kind of academic edge to it and feel, because you're being sort of placed, this historical almost analysis, if you will, of Palestine and the Middle East and the image, frankly. I can so tell you're a photographer, some of the images that you focus on, they're stunning. Is there a sense in which you could do a series of films about this issue, this story, this finding of the image for Palestine?
I think so. It's more of a period than a film It's more of a research. When I started, I didn't thought that I'm gonna make a film. But the whole story started in 2005. When one of the, this old director, old man, he doesn't do anything, but everybody respect him around town. I never saw any of his work. And he came to me and I have this short film. I want to subtitle, to put English on it. This is kind of my usual job here. I mean, in the company, we do subtitling, burning, and export stuff like that. Tell him, let's come in. I mean, we can give you 1 or 2 days. And especially it's 20 minutes, I was not expecting it would be more than one day of work. But when he came in and we start watching and he start telling me the stories behind it, it took us more than a week. And this guy is Mustafa Abu Ali. His name is Mustafa Abu Ali, and he's the founder of the Palestine Film Unit and one of the main figures of that period.
He's the one that you dedicate the film to him at the beginning, do you not?
Yes, I dedicate the film to him because kind of it's like being living in parallel with him, but without having the accessibility. And right. The accessibility happened when I went to do my master's in London at Goldsmith in 2009. And there, in one of the lectures, there was like a course about cinema history, and there was a part of third cinema. And the teacher, the lecturer, looked at me and like, "Ah, you're a Palestinian?" No, like, "Yeah, I'm a Palestinian. Do you know Mustafa Abu Ali?" Like, "Yeah, I mean, I know Mustafa Abu Ali. I did, I know him quite well." And she told me, "So say, what do you know about him?" Like, "Yeah, he's an old man who lives in the town, but I didn't see, I saw only one film of him." And then she started to talk about the whole history of militant cinema, Palestinian revolution cinema, and its relation with the international scene, with Jean-Luc Godard, Koji Wakamatsu, Masao Adachi, what's the Santiago Alvarez, and it's like kind of describing an underground network of political parties in relation with films. And it's like that minute I suddenly discovered that, oh my God, there is a history, because there is a link. Palestinian cinema is just it's not only about today.
Right.
It's not about films about the checkpoints or suicide bombers there is something else, a film industry, film scene that was happening that I don't know about. And that day I went back and started researching. I felt a little bit enthusiastic and happy that, yeah, finally, Palestinians, we have part of this history of cinema, great cinema history. But at the same time, I was ashamed because I didn't know about it. And I was thinking, why don't I know about it?
Right.
And from there, the whole thing started, like digging. And it's very weird because it's everything is there, but it's not there. It's kind of you're looking for a shadow. Like you can read like bits and pieces about things, but there is nothing in one place. You can hear about a film, but you can't see it. You can see the film, but you wouldn't understand the context. So it took me and my partner Reem Schiller around 3 years to dig out. And we really found amazing stuff in different places all around the world. But that also brought that question. So why all the time they are complaining about the loss of the archive of the Palestinian films? I mean, they are there, but nobody is looking for them. And that's what made me realize that it is the Oslo thing. It's what we called, in between two brackets, peace, the peace process.
Right.
The peace process required us to forget about our past so we can be eligible to be in peace, which is not the right thing at the end of the day. I think it's part of our future.
If we don't
know about that past, how we can deal with the questions and challenges of the future? And I think that this research, more importantly than the film or any kind of a package or product, it's that sense. Having the ability to give answers to certain questions like from in different levels, whether it's political level or even technical level.
Sure.
How to film how to film in hard situation. You'll find all of these answers in that part. So they're like, okay, one of the questions they would have, if you have a 10-minute reel and you're in the middle of the battle, what would you shoot? What would you film? And it's the same question today. I mean, the urgency of the topic. It's the same question today, for example, in the Arab Springs, in many Arab countries. And also the political level of that. So how do we, what are we doing the film for? For the pleasure, for the artistic, or for the message? It's all of these things. I can't specify it at once, but once I see a situation, I have a reference.
You say that great phrase, by the way, that it's kind of like it's a period, it's a piece, it's a part of our history. And then you said it's like looking for a shadow. In the film, I think it comes out that this is a film about people, quote, in search of their own image. Is this about history for you? Is this really about memory and how it's going to affect you know, what's next and the future and how people respond to current events and to what's going on. I mean, there's a real, as you say, there's a real sense of urgency, I believe, to your film.
I think it's for us locally, like for Palestinians, it has a certain urgency. We are now in a situation where we don't know if this is working, the situation we are in. I mean, we can't even invite, we have, 3 million Palestinians who are refugees, and they are second refugees now, because like Palestinian refugees in Syria, and now there are refugees in Europe or in Lebanon. We even can't think about having them. We don't want them to go to Israel, but at least open us the border to invite them to come and live among us, for example. We can't even do that, you know. So there is a kind of, so what is the relation between us Palestinians who live in West Bank and the Palestinian who lives in diaspora, or who lives in Gaza, or who lives in refugee camps? And it's that moment of the history that it kind of unified the whole Palestinians under one title. Okay, armed struggle, that was a sexy idea, and it gathered people around them, but it also created an identity.
Right.
A certain identity that it doesn't have to be the identity of today. I'm not talking about armed struggle, but I'm talking about more of the unity of the people. And it's like finding some common bridges between all of us. And this specific period, it's basically the bridge between all of us. Yani, military revolution and refugee camps is the two things that everybody, all Palestinian knows about. So I made the film that kind of bring that for us together to watch it. It's very sad when they watch it. I mean, we didn't premiere it here in Ramallah, but the friends and the people who see some parts of it, and it always gets to like, so why we are like this today? What happened to us? And this is exactly what I need.
Do you feel there's with the folks, the people, the Palestinians that you've actually watched it with, and it's going to be very interesting to see how people receive it once it's screened locally. Is there a sense of passion for a new future, or is there a sense of regret, or is it more of a kind of similar to you? You know, this sense of being ashamed that wow, I didn't actually know this was a part of our history.
It's everything.
Yeah.
All of what you said, and it's not about one film. It's a beginning to ask questions, and I hope it's. I did the film in a kind of it's more of an anthology or an encyclopedic way, so it becomes a reference for someone who will come after and just start ask the questions in a deeper way, and make another film and another film, because it's not a one film that changed history.
Right.
It's an accumulation of things, and it's just a beginning overall. That's why I think it's a. It doesn't have to be bigger than it is, and it doesn't have to be just a simple work. It's just a piece that, and I deal with it more as a, not a film essay, but more of as a piece for that I did with love, more than anything else, just to bring it out to people and let it have its life, and let's see how it's going to react to them.
I love what you said about how you started to work, you know, doing a little bit of research and with Mustafa, and you said you thought it was going to only take one day. And so what was that? That was 7 years ago?
That was like, yes, even more, like 10 years ago. 10 years ago.
Well, I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Mohanad, it's really interesting. You know, you said, you know, one film is not going to change history, but it's an accumulation of things. It's an accumulation of stories, of facts, of history, of memory, of images, that, you know, of a narrative, you know, of a thread to say, you know, I love the way you start, well, near the beginning of the film, the crossing of the Allenby Bridge and the West Bank into Jordan, and just this idea of, you know, your notion that you just said, it is about building bridges, and where the heck, you know, you look at a film like yours and you just see the connections to what's going on today around the world and in Syria, and just what's happened over the last 30, 40, 50 years, not a whole heck of a lot has changed in some regards.
Nothing. This is the amazing part, you know? I mean, it's the same. We are still missing this modernity project.
Huh. Nice.
The Palestinian Revolution in the 60s and 70s were, that's what, why the Arabs, mainly the Arab governments, fought the Palestinian Revolution. I mean, what ended the Palestinian Revolution was not the Israelis, were the Arabs. Because the modernity project that was they were presenting was threatening the existence of these regimes. These regimes are based on having their citizen as sheep, right, and as backwarded, and they don't have any access to technology and access to human rights. The Palestinian Revolution at that moment was, you know, if you see the material of the film, it was all focusing about education, about empowering women, about changing your social possibilities. And the other, like in Jordan, okay, the Jordanians were looking at the Palestinian transforming their society into something better, and that's what they, okay, if the Palestinian who doesn't have a government and doesn't have a land are able to do that, why we're not able to do that? In Lebanon, the health system that the Palestinian Revolution managed to build up, because in Lebanon it's everything is privatized, so they don't have a local or like a public health system. They can go, the Lebanese, to at the time of 70s, they would go and have health treatment for free in the Palestinian health institution system. And that was scary for the governments, for sure.
Right.
That modernity project is the same questions of the Arab Spring today. Of what happens in Egypt, in Libya, in Syria. And I mean, it's and that's the sad thing about the film again. And sad thing about this history of the missed chance. Maybe the Palestinian Revolution was too early at that moment.
Do you think, so you say that's, the, you know, you've talked about the sadness, there is, without a doubt, there is a melancholic edge to the film and reminiscent of older doc films that I've seen in the past, and the black and white footage, I think, sort of evokes that kind of emotional response to some degree as well, and the juxtaposition of the images and so on. But near the end of the film, you know, you've got Yasser Arafat talking, I think, to the UN, is that right?
Yes.
And saying, you know, do not let the green olive branch fall from your hand, and he says it several times, I believe, in a row. I mean, is this film for you a hopeful exercise? Was it a hopeful exercise? As you dug more deeply into the research, were you becoming more cynical? Were you losing a sense of the future and hope for what's next?
No, it's yeah, it's chronological. What you said, it's all. I passed all of that.
you went through all those, like, all those stages.
All of the stages. Yeah, there's at some part there is this hope, and then there's this depression, and there's like you say like, oh, there is no way of doing anything, especially after seeing. I mean, I was in the middle of working in this film while what was happening in the Arab world was still fresh in Egypt. There's like young filmmakers bringing fresh material, Syrians in Lebanon bringing a lot of material. I mean, I felt that was like there was a hope, but then seeing the turnover of situations. And thinking about, okay, that also happened with the Palestinian Revolution, felt like it's too strong. I mean, the change is kind of impossible for us. But today, no, I think it's, again, I think it's not of one I mean, it's a continuation. And we have more understanding the history, not only the history of the Palestinian Revolution, the Arab world, the French Revolution. You kind of have a sense that, yeah, you just need to keep going.
Right.
And enjoy doing things. Whatever is going to happen, is going to happen. I did what I can. I at least now, at least today, I can say when, like 5 years ago, when we were talking about Palestinian cinema, we started with Ilya Sliman. Today, we start from Mustafa Abu Ali. And many, I mean, no one, most of the people who are practicing and curators, artists, filmmakers, they start to know about that. Ah, there is something before the 80s in the Palestinian cinema. It's a rich history.
What's so beautiful to me about what you've done, Mohanad, is you've created this historical document, this piece of art. You've got, you know, as others have said, it's this film essay. It's going to be studied in schools. It's really, I mean, it's working on so many levels. And frankly, it's quite the critique of colonialism, too. I mean, you don't have to, some of it is in your face for sure in the film. And there's one portion where you actually sort of play it out about, you know, colonial interests and Zionist ambitions. But I think overall, there's this sense in which Again, another historical reference point for all of us, not just for Palestinians.
I think so. I mean, I'm sure the young French filmmakers don't know a lot about, for example, Chris Marker, or a certain work of Chris Marker, or certain work of Vincent Film Group, political filmmakers who were working in strikes and May 68. That film makes you think that each one has his history of struggle.
Right.
And I think every place we are facing the same system, the same oppression in somehow, whether in different levels, some is physical, some is psychological or economical. But at the end of the day, it's always this fight between the people's will and the fat cats. It's as simple as that.
Right.
At the end of the day. And it's whether Palestinian, and at that time, Palestinian in the 70s were seen as the example. And I think today the Palestinian cinema or the Palestinian revolution can be seen as an example, like many other examples, like Black Panthers, like the Algerian revolution. I mean, I don't like these big revolutions because they became very totalitarian, like dictatorship regimes. But the small movements like Black Panthers, the settings, the workers, the strikes in France, in Italy, the student movement, these things that are small, but they're effective. They left a memory of the people who were living at that moment.
Would you say you know, as a result of this experience, are you are you anti-war as a result of this? I mean, are you, you know, was that a very conscious choice to leave Arafat's notion of the olive branch at the end of the film kind of one of the things for people to take away from? Does that question make sense, Mohamed?
Yeah, I mean, the specific one, you know, there is a history because that many of the Palestinian factions in the 74 were against Arafat going to the UN.
Right.
Because basically, to go to the UN, the Palestinian charter has to be changed from having the Palestinian state on the total Palestine to at any part of Palestine. So it's the 1974 where Arafat agreed that, okay, our aim of this revolution is to have the Palestinian state at any part of Palestine, not at the whole Palestine. So this dramatic change made a lot of problems because, like, especially the left, radical left, where they were like the PFLP, the AFLP, they were, no, we don't want to change that. But that's why I used it. But I used it mainly to see how the political direction affects the aesthetics.
Mm.
So to prove to the world that we deserve a state, Arafat, since 74, started to change the PLO from a militant, creative body to a more institutional bureaucratic body. So, for example, in the cinema, it used to be the Palestine Film Unit, and it was a group of guys, Mustafa Hani and Sulafa, who decided, we will join, we are filmmakers, we would like to join. They were free to do whatever kind of film, their inner conscience was leading them. After 74, they signed, the PLO had a restructuring, and they said, okay, now we have the unified media, and there's a department called the Palestinian Film Institute, and these guys now has to be part of the Palestinian Film Institute. Each film has to be approved. It has a budget. There is labs, you know, everything. So it kind of shrink the creativity and the militancy at the same time of that. That's why I used it. And I'm seeing that how it affected aesthetics. So they used to have their logo, for example, was three Kalashnikovs.
Right.
After 74, it became one Kalashnikov with a cinema reel on it. And an olive branch going out of the cinema reel. So it's kind of a implementation of the political direction. And you can see that in going in everything, in posters, in radio, in newspapers, in the way that health system is organized. They managed to build an institution, but the problem is it wasn't in their land. That's why it led to all of this chaos in Lebanon.
Mohanad, is there such a thing as a peaceful revolution?
I don't think so. There is a revolution, and the revolution is not against anyone. The revolution is against, it's about the society and changing right. the values of society. Now, camera is a tool, a gun is a tool. I think it, each one has a its use, and I prefer not to use a gun at the end of the day. But sometimes, I don't know, there is a historical moment that I don't know how to decide about it. I never was in a revolution. I wouldn't agree that any of the Arab Spring, for example, turned into militant, because right. there is enough power in the people to change things peacefully.
That's nice. I love how near the end of the film, and help me out here and even provide some context for our listeners, but you've got some really quite moving images from, I believe, a camera that was, can I say the word rescued? That was taken, I guess, from the body of a cameraman who had died, bullet holes in the camera. And you actually, I believe, play out the footage that was found in the housing of the camera from a battlefield. Really, I mean, the images are astounding and crisp and so stark and so on. But I think, you know, to your point about camera being a weapon and working towards more of a peaceful kind of revolution or peaceful movement towards change, I guess you could almost say. It's an incredible moment in the film.
That's actually, yani, I was really doubting to put that one, but at the end I said, yes, they killed the revolution, and this cameraman, who's one of the founders, and he's an iconic figure of the militant cinema, not only for Palestinians, like his adding to the image, Hani Jawharia, and he was filming in the mountains in Lebanon in one of the battles of the civil war, basically.
Okay.
So he was killed by a Syrian shell.
Wow.
Not even an Israeli show.
Wow.
And this part comes from a film that Mustafa Abu Ali made in mourning his friend Hani Jawharia. It's a film called Palestine in the Eye, and it's made in 1977. And it's basically the history of the unit through the camera of Hani.
Right.
It's a beautiful film, and it's really touchy to have it. But it's also interesting to see Arafat and his crowd watching the revolution while the revolution is happening.
Right.
Like walking in the because they made an exhibition of his work and it's a celebration of the revolution aesthetics while the revolution. What you usually do when you win, you know, or when you finish the struggle. But they were doing that while the struggle is going on, and it shows that how the revolution becomes an institution that is celebrating itself in somehow.
Mm.
But yeah, that moment is very interesting. I didn't want to explain these things in the film because I tried a lot of cuts. I mean, this is the sixth cut.
Okay.
Of the film. The film was longer and it had a lot of interviews. I did more than 36 interviews with characters from that period, with filmmakers of that period. But I decided to do another documentary, a second part of off-frame Palestine Film Unit, aka Palestine Film Unit, which is basically only interviews.
Oh, okay. And is that going to be released soon, or are you working on that now?
I'm hoping for next Toronto, actually.
Oh, you're kidding! Oh, good for you. That's amazing. Hey, and
the material now, I just need to sit down and cut it properly, and I don't need. It's interesting because I'm making a film about like a film of interviews. The interviewers are saying about image that we don't see. You need to go to the first film to see the images they're
right,
talking about.
Right, Mohanad. Before we'll probably wrap up here in a few minutes. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about what's happening with the film? You've got a release coming up in December, I believe you had mentioned earlier before the recording started. And then let's come back. I've got a couple more questions for you before we wrap up and conclude.
Yeah, the film, yani, now it's, we're premiering next. We're having the next screening at Dubai International Film Festival between the beginning of December, which is going to be the MENA premiere, the Middle Eastern North African premiere. It's good. I'm happy with that one because it's like kind of being in between on my land and between the people, my people.
Right.
And that's gonna like I'm gonna be there hopefully and feel it with the people because many Palestinians as well live in Dubai and the United Arab Emirates, and I'm hoping to have them and see them. Next after that, we are planning several festivals, but really I want to finish the festival life soon and try to go directly to the academic release because this is where I feel to this film will have its life in academia, in film students.
Yes,
gonna watch that and think about making other films from the same period in the same spirit and to make it continue in somehow.
Well, you know, it's so beautiful that you mention students and you know, I'm a student, I'm a perpetual student and I'm in my 50s. And so, but typically when you think of a student, you think of somebody young and, you know, there's this sort of startling image you have of Vanessa Redgrave in the film. And she's quoting John Dulles, who says that the old ones, what is it? The old ones will die and the young ones will forget.
That's a statement. Yeah.
Yeah. And clearly, you're doing everything you can to make sure that's not going to be the case.
And yeah, I think, yeah, it's not the case anymore. Khalas, we have enough material into public domain that this is not going to be the case. I mean, that's the thing about the Palestinian revolution, no? I mean, yesterday we're having a big event in Ramallah. It's called Qalandi International. There's a lot of exhibitions and galleries. And there is a group, one of the events, there's a group from indigenous Australian filmmakers who came to Ramallah. And yesterday we were meeting them, me and my partner. And it's interesting to see what the Palestinian revolution did, really. And comparing to what the like now the struggle of indigenous people, whether Polynesia or New Zealand, Australia, even in America, no? It's the Palestinian Revolution managed to give an image and words and sound of all the Palestinians, and this was very important. Now I'm not afraid of being lost or disappearing as a Palestinian.
Nice.
I don't have this existential fear. Where in 48, that was a situation. In 48, in 1948, with the establishment of the State of Israel, and suddenly there is nothing called Palestine, none on maps, not on political level. You don't have even records of papers or documents. Everything got lost, totally invisible. Huh? And the Palestinian Revolution brought the Palestinian back. And I like to quote he's a writer and a photography professional, Elias Sambar, who said if you're invisible, a camera would be your weapon.
Mm.
And it's really like the Palestinian Revolution was not about winning or it wasn't about a military struggle. I mean, holding gun is not about fighting with it. It's about taking a photograph with that.
Right.
Shooting was not about killing, it's about listening, making the other hear the sound.
Mm.
And I think that's the 21st century politics, no? It's all about media and existence on being visible on that media. It's a PR.
Right.
I mean, and I think that what Palestinian Revolution managed is to PR an image of Palestinians. Of course, it took the politics and the mechanisms of the 70s, the politics of the 70s, the discussions of Trotsky and Maoist, all of that, and it mingles between them. But it managed to bring us back into a map, into a certain map.
Two films that I saw at TIFF over the last couple of years, Mohanad, one last year and I think one year before, A Flickering Truth, I don't know if you've heard of it, and then another film, Silvered Water. And both films that are sort of reminiscent of what you've done here to some degree. They're films about memory, they're films about war, they're films about struggle, freedom, liberation, and about finding, you know, a sense of identity through the image and so on. And I highly recommend them to our listeners, but to you as well. you know, let's just, we've got to wrap it up, Mohanad.
Yeah, I can't speak forever,
I'm getting,
please do it, man.
I'm getting that sense, which is really wonderful. And maybe, and I often say this, but maybe we can do a part two. I would really like to do that in the future.
Maybe next year, huh?
Yeah, maybe next year when you premiere your next film. The Battle of Kerama, you know, you've got these shots of the rubble after the bombings. And I believe somebody refers to the rubble as becoming a symbol of resistance. And I couldn't help but see the images that we're currently seeing of Syria and Aleppo and so on and what's going on. And again, just that bridge, you know, that we've to come full circle in our conversation, that not only the bridge in the film, but the bridge that you've referred to, you know, we're just, I mean, what is next, you know? You know, we've kind of agreed here together that we really haven't come that far, really. Things have changed in so many ways, and yet we still seem to be at a perpetual state of war. And how do you remain hopeful in that, Mohanad? You know?
I was editing the main part, especially the Kerama part and the 70 Black September part. It was the war in Gaza, 2014, and my family lives in Gaza. They still live there.
Okay.
It was a really hard moment. I was like in the studio, and me and my editor were working and watching the images at the same time. We had another screen that was playing Al Jazeera and BBC, and all of the other images are coming, and we were like looking at that, and we were shocked. It's the same, it's like, okay, this is color, this is black and white, but even the composition of the rebels looks the same.
Right.
Even the bodies, how they are shredded, look the same. And I think that's why I decided to add, I mean, I don't like to add bodies.
Right.
I know it's inhuman and it's not for the families, but it's just to put that resemblance. To make a kind of an alarm saying, look, we're still the same. Death is the same death. Destruction is the destruction. Why are we still doing this?
Why are we still doing it?
To ourselves. But I think we do this because we are not connected to history.
Interesting.
And I love, there is a great film for Adam Kurtz, was about the Nazi, hiding the Nazi artifacts in Europe, and he ends the film with the two soldiers in Yugoslavia war, and they were like shocked with the violence, and it's like, how could that happen? And Adam Kurtz wraps it up in a nice way, because we hide our history.
Right.
We shouldn't. We should keep this in front of us to learn and to know that this can come again and again if we don't stop this vicious circle of blood and power.
Well, and I think, you know, Mohanad, and I too, with you, could talk about these things for hours. I find it fascinating and interesting, and I've learned so much from your film, and it's, honestly, it's, and I'm with you. I hope it goes on to be studied for years and many, many years to come, and is the seed for many other films. But it's about history, but isn't it also about our ability to, again, I'm going to go with the bridge. The bridge to the other, the bridge to others, the bridge to Palestinians, the bridge to Cambodians, the bridge to Malawians. How do we, you know, that almost, like, there's a sense of community even in your film that I get, that I think is so desperately lacking in our global, context today. You know, you look at American politics and so on, you pretty much can pick, you know, any country around the world and look at the politics and you go, where are the bridges?
Yeah. I mean, in that period of making films, it's so interesting to study, David. In each of these films, whether it was like made in Laos or made in south of Yemen or made in Palestine or in Algeria, there is always a small bit at the end that they are sending as a solidarity messages,
right,
from a struggle to a struggle.
From a struggle to a struggle.
Like, for example, in Vietnam, they're saying, like our Palestinian comrades, we are still continuing. We send them our support. Our friends in Cuba, their continuous support. I mean, it's building the bridge an aware way. I mean, you can't build the bridge of just like, I'm walking in and I suddenly found a bridge. No, it's a conscious, a bridge, it's a mechanical thing. It's something you build.
Yes.
And the awareness to build it up. And that's, I mean, I like that to use that as well, but it's, this is really the difference between oppressed and victim.
Mm.
Oppressed,
nice.
A victim sits down and waits for someone to help him. An oppressed is coming out trying to communicate with other oppressed people, tell the story, listen to the story, and build a bridge in that case. And that's what Oslo made us. Or, I mean, this is a whole new colonial thing that made many of the struggles as looks like a victim. Not it, as people who are suffering from a political injustice.
I think
it's not political injustice.
I think that's a great way to wrap it up. There's a difference between an oppressed and a victim, and it sounds to me like you're talking about action. You're talking about freedom. You're talking about choice. You're talking about responsibility.
Yes. I mean, just to quote this, Caravan is the name of the indigenous Australian, and I asked them yesterday, so how do you imagine, what is victory for you? I mean, how do you you're doing this, you're trying to tell your story, but what are you trying to, what, where do you want to reach? And the three of them don't speak very good English, sovereignty.
Sovereignty.
We want to be able to decide about our future, our kids' future, without anyone telling us, whether it's white or whatever race they are, to tell us on our land that we can't do this or do that.
Mm.
It's simple. It's very simple, huh? But seeing,
it's very, yeah.
That, them, I really like cried. I mean, almost cried seeing that it's still valid. Whatever you try to put it with credit cards, international systems, everything. No, the ability to have a future for you and your kids and to live freely. That's the main thing.
After that,
we can have a communication. We can talk. We can love each other with everything. But before that, it's hard. You're not a free person.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, Mohanad Yacoubi, talking today about his new film, Off Frame, aka Revolution Until Victory. And by the sounds of it, he may be back at the Toronto International Film Festival next year with his new film. Mohanad, thank you for your time, for your thoughts, your wisdom, your insight, and most of all, thank you for your film. I really appreciate your time today.
Thanks a lot, David. Thanks a lot for this chance.